This program deals with themes of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
We're going to be talking about the penis. We'll be talking about the vagina. Do you think that's funny, butthead? Do you find it amusing that we'll be talking about the testicles? Yes, we're also going to be talking about venereal disease, sexual intercourse, and we will definitely be spending a lot of time talking about masturbation.
Injection, fellas.
If you want to write all that slop, you better give me some laughs in there.
I am a strong woman, grow up in the projects. By the time I was 6, strong like wood. By the time I was 8, iron instead. I am what I am, rise from the fire flames inside of me, wanting to burst out, not wanting to accept my lower class.
Gunshot.
I just made that shit up. So this, I should clarify, I'm bullshitting this mostly, I'm just playing around. Because there's some, I went to a poetry jam reading once in Venice, and it was kind of interesting.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
The Masturbation Network, keeping America baiting for 300 years. And now, Sweet Bang Tube.
Oh yeah, give me some. Cut me a piece. Oh, you just... Go away, baiting! Damn it.
I was told that I had confessed to masturbating and exposing myself to children. That is an absolute blatant lie. I don't know where that came from.
We are going to support Israel. And I've said that we will support Israel in every way that we can, whether it's diplomatic, whether it's economic sanctions, whether it's overt or covert operations, up to and including military action. We cannot afford to allow that madman in Iran to get his hands on a nuclear weapon, period.
Even if it started a war in the region?
We cannot allow that madman to get his hands on a nuclear weapon, because we know what he would do with it.
I was not. I wasn't looking at anyone. I was way down in my car.
You mentioned you had a problem.
The nature of my problem is pornography.
And I will tell you, it's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
You need five.
Oh, five.
Yeah,
okay. So,
five.
Commerce, education, and
EPA.
EPA. There you go. No, okay.
Right, let's talk deposition.
Seriously, is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir. No, sir. We were talking about the agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But
there's
you
no
can't,
doubt about
but
that.
But you can't name the third one.
The third agency of government.
Yeah.
I would do away with the education.
Commerce,
and let's see, I can't, the third one I can't, sorry, oops.
When I'm a-walking, I start my stop, and I'm so strung out, I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you out, let me go on, like I just do in the sun, let me go on, big hands, I know you're the one.
Yeah, yes, I understand hypocrisy. I understand it clearly, and it deeply hurts me. And when I look back, there's a lot of things I would have done differently. I was very proudful. I was very arrogant. I was very mean-spirited at times. And I apologize. And it, you know, some of the problem has been pride, you know. So I confess, and I'll fess up to, you know, my shortcomings.
I want to thank you for asking that question, because that really is the number one issue that's facing the country. We are in a terrible debt spiral, so much so that just in the month of October, we just added another $203 billion in debt. And when you consider the last time that Republicans controlled the budget, it was 2007, and the debt was $160 billion for the year. This was $203 billion just for the month of October. For every man, woman, and child in the United States, that means each one of us just took on another $650 in debt just for the month of October. That's the velocity that we're growing with debt. So what would I cut? I think really what I would want to do is be able to go back and take a look at Lyndon Baines Johnson's Great Society. The Great Society has not worked, and it's put us into the modern welfare state. If you look at China, they don't have food stamps. If you look at China, they're in a very different situation. They save for their own retirement security. They don't have AFDC. They don't have the modern welfare state, and China's growing. And so what I would do is look at the programs that LBJ gave us at the Great Society, and they'd be gone. Well, first of all, I'm not confessing to even the masturbation. I'm confessing to having my hands, you know, however people want to interpret that, they can interpret it.
Well, were you doing that? I mean, you just said
I have my hands in my pants.
Let me start and say that both the answers you just got are superior to the current administration.
Yeah.
You know, there are a number of ways to be smart about Iran and relatively few ways to be dumb, and the administration skipped all the ways to be smart.
Could you tell us the smart ways,
sure.
Mr. Speaker?
Sure. First of all, maximum covert operations to block and disrupt the Iranian program, including taking out their scientists, including breaking up their systems, all of it covertly, all of it deniable. Second, maximum coordination with the Israelis in a way which allows them to maximize their impact in Iran. Third, absolute strategic program comparable to what President Reagan, Pope John Paul II, and Margaret Thatcher did to the Soviet Union, of every possible aspect short of war, of breaking the regime and bringing it down. And I agree entirely with Governor Romney. If in the end, despite all of those things, the dictatorship persists, you have to take whatever steps are necessary to break its capacity to have a nuclear weapon.
When I'm walking, I strut my stuff, yeah, so strung out. I'm high as kite, I just might stop to check the run. And that body beats, I stay my sheets, I don't need it all. Why, my girlfriend, she's at the end, she is starting to cry.
Well, I it's convenient. For me, I have customers all in that area, and I just go, it's a nice park, and I was just trying to be, you know, private in the sense of, you know, I tried not to let anybody see.
Look, one thing you can know, and that is if we re-elect Barack Obama, Iran will have a nuclear weapon, and if we elect Mitt Romney, if you elect me as the next president, they will not have a nuclear weapon.
I want to address this thing. This is news to me that I confessed to or was even charged with masturbating and exposing myself to children. When I was arrested, I asked the police officer as he was taking me to jail, I said, what's the process? He said, well, the sooner we get you in, the sooner you're going to get out. That doesn't sound like they were charging me with masturbating and exposing myself to children. I've never done anything inappropriate with children. Was I at a bad place? Yeah, I should not have been there. I agree with that. I understand that people can look at that and interpret things, but no child even, I don't even think they seen me physically. I was real low in the van.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be somebody who would be your advocate and help you through the process, help guide you through the process, show you the benefits you can get, how you can get through the healthcare system, as opposed to people trying to stop you. My guess is it's two things going on. One is people trying to save money. They've got a budget, and so they're told you can't spend more than this amount, so they're trying to stop people so they can try and hold on to their budget or meet their budget. And then the other is sometimes people just get worn down. When you work in the private sector and you have a competitor, you know, if I don't treat this customer right, they're going to leave me and go somewhere else, so I better treat them right. Whereas if you're the government, they know there's nowhere else you guys can go. You're stuck. Sometimes you wonder, would be some way to introduce some private sector competition. Somebody else that could come in and say, hey, each soldier gets X $1,000 attributed to them, and then they can choose whether they want to go in the government system or in a private system with the money that follows them, like what happens with schools in Florida where people have a voucher that goes with them. Who knows?
Let me go on, like I blister in the sun. Let me go on.
Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows?
I'm not a pedophile, not a child molester, and I don't go exposing myself to children. I have tons of testimony that can state that. I have many, many pastors who have brought their children over to the house, and there was never once anything, you know, mention of me being inappropriate with children. And I did say some things on a tape, and I'm going to try to get that taken out because I was disoriented and confused.
If I were president, I would be willing to use waterboarding. I think it was very effective. It gained information for our country. And I also would like to say that today, under Barack Obama, he is allowing the ACLU to run the CIA. You need to understand that today, when we interdict a terrorist on the battlefield, we have no jail for them. We have nowhere to take them. We have no CIA interrogation anymore. It is as though we have decided we want to lose in the war on terror under President Obama. That's not my strategy. My strategy will be that the United States will be victorious in the war on terror.
Dirty bit.
Go away, Baton!
This is Herman Cain, candidate for the 2012 Republican U.S. presidential nomination. He has defended himself against accusations of sexual harassment.
I have never acted inappropriately with anyone. Period. I saw Ms. Allred and her client yesterday in that news conference for the very first time. As I sat in my hotel room with a couple of my staff members, as they got to the microphone, my first response in my mind and reaction was, I don't even know who this woman is. The charges and the accusations I absolutely reject. They simply didn't happen.
Sharon Bialik is one of some four accusers. He also defended himself against another claim from a spokeswoman at the U.S. Treasury Department, Karen Crowshaw.
I can only recall one thing that I was aware of that was called sexual harassment. The one thing that I remember during the day when all of this broke loose is that one day in my office at the National Restaurant Association, I was standing next to Ms. Crowshaw, and I gestured, standing near her like this, "You're the same height as my wife, because my wife comes up to my chin." That was the one gesture that I remember.
Hello, I'm Herman Cain. The man has been shouting the number 9 on your TV. I used to be the CEO of Godfather's. A restaurant so gross it made my children hate pizza. But now, I'm running for president and leading in the Republican polls. Why? Because the Tea Party loves crazy more than they hate black. And I'm crazier than this house rat. And I'm not going anywhere. I'll win this Republican nomination because with your support, I can and will be much crazier.
Kane!
I'm going to wear a flag pin the size of a fat baby's head.
Kane!
And show off the cool handshake me and Jesus have been working on for when he comes back to Earth.
Okay!
My alternative energy plan will be to use illegal aliens as human batteries, like in the Matrix. As part of my tough stance on immigration, Taco Tuesdays will be changed to Pizza Thursday.
Hey!
Finally, my vice president nominee will be a computer programmed to think like Ronald Reagan.
Please insert a jelly bean into my USB port. I run on jelly beans like Ronald Reagan.
I love you. Chocolate might be the flavor of the week, but crazy is the taste Republicans never tire of. I want to be with your president because this can't is able. And if you give me time, I'll make you a fable.
You guys should probably listen to me because I'm pretty important. The other day, my roommate walked in on me while I was masturbating. Actually, you know what? I said that wrong. The other day I walked in on my roommate while I was masturbating.
You remember when we discovered masturbation, fellas? You remember? We didn't get shit done that week, did we? That's all we wanted to do. This feels great. How come nobody told me about this? We were always made to feel guilty. My daddy'd always say, "Don't be pulling on your pecker, you yank that sister in my mouth, end up like your sister." You know she used to be your brother. Y'all get in here and eat. And there ain't no reason we should feel guilty. If God didn't want us to do it, he'd have made our arms shorter. I think that's why the Tyrannosaurus Rex was such an angry creature.
Go away, Baton!
I agree with you about that. That's not the problem. That's not the problem. The problem is you got to be consistent. And I don't want government meddling in the marketplace. Yeah, they move from Goldman Sachs to the White House. I understand all of that. But you got to be consistent. And it's not the private marketplace that created this mess. What created this mess is your government, which has demanded for years that everybody be in a home. And we've made it as easy as possible for people to be in homes. All the marketplace does is respond to what the government does. The government sets the rules. Don't blame banks and don't blame the marketplace for the mess we're in right now. I am tired of hearing that crap.
So don't.
I am tired of hearing that crap.
Fighting the situation, taking in money out to people they know they couldn't afford it.
There are already mechanisms in place. No, you know what? Because this pisses me off. Too many people don't listen. There are already mechanisms in place to do that. Are they doing their job? No. But what do you want to do? You want to bombard them with more regulations? More government?
No, government's not reform.
government screwed this problem up. What do you want? Well, you know what you've got?
Because
you,
honestly,
no, you know what you've got?
Banks,
you got Dodd-Frank.
The banks left.
You got Dodd-Frank now that's tying everybody's hands. You wanted more reform, more regulation? That's what you got. John, do you want more regulation? Is that what you want? Do you want Dodd-Frank? Is that what you want?
What did I say back at Joe's barbershop?
I need more coffee. It's
no,
so,
I think you've had too
it's
much.
So freaking easy.
Decaf.
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 Give me some decaf.
No, Joe. Long stuff. Quiet for a minute.
Hang on.
Quiet for a minute.
What did I say?
Quiet for a minute. Or I'm going to ask you to leave. You need to listen. Or I'm going to ask you to leave.
The latest GOP debate concludes with the candidates wrestling a squealing pig to the ground and slaughtering it. Brendan Fraser signs on to star in a new pre-movie trivia question, and a snooze button is smacked like it delivers morphine. Welcome to the pandering afterthought that is this edition of the Onion Week in Review. According to a report published this week, researchers have definitively concluded that it, all of it, is some kind of sick joke. The Princeton study suggests that the entirety of existence, including time, marriage, migratory patterns of birds, continental drift, life itself, photosynthesis, human society, and the changing of the seasons, are all part of a massive twisted ruse orchestrated by a spiteful cosmos.
Look at you morons, taking this stupid video for your pointless newspaper. Everything's a joke. I'm a joke, you're a joke, the whole universe is a joke.
We at the Onion Week in Review are compelled to inform viewers that while this entire segment is indeed one small part of the giant perverse joke, the upshot is that the next minute of your life will be no more or less pointless than if you were to spend it with a loved one, mentoring an at-risk youth, or simply wallowing in your own feculence. Police in Lehman, Michigan describe a local student's recently foiled plans to commit a deadly school shooting as, quote, embarrassingly bad. Authorities apprehended 17-year-old Trent Bayer Thursday after finding him in an empty hallway struggling to load a pathetically small caliber pistol while simultaneously attempting to unfold an inaccurate, crudely drawn map of the school. Lehman Police Chief Ethan Holman elaborated several ways Bayer's strategy could have been more effective, including setting off a homemade explosive in the teacher's lounge, executing popular students first, and at the very least, purchasing some military fatigues.
You're not going to intimidate anyone by wearing a tucked-in button-down shirt and pleated trousers.
Several bank executives are currently gambling on which Occupy Wall Street protester will be arrested next. This morning, members of the financial services firm The Whittinger Group gathered at the window of their 15th-floor boardroom overlooking Manhattan's Zuccotti Park and tabulated odds on a large dry erase board to keep track of the growing pot of cash.
I had 10 grand on that crazy bitch in the camo pants. They went for the bandana guy instead. Dumb fuck.
As of this afternoon, more than $1.2 million had changed hands, with Vice Chairman Malcolm Grant taking in more than $300,000 in winnings for correctly betting on the arrest of a man in a Guy Fawkes mask. In this weekend's Onion magazine, our editors reveal 10 prayers that will really get God to stand up and take notice. In other news, Harley Davidson and Jack Daniels collaborate on a local felony. A churchgoer blanks on why she's lighting a votive candle, and President Obama is now attempting to pass each word of his jobs bill individually.
In this video, I'm going to illustrate to you in very simple terms why the dollar and the euro are mathematically guaranteed to collapse and have been since the moment they were created. You don't need to be an economist to understand what I'm going to show you. A little common sense will do just fine. The dollar and the euro are debt-based currencies created by the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank. Now, these central banks, while masquerading as public entities, are actually made up of a consortium of the most powerful private banks in the world. When I say that the dollar and the euro are debt-based currencies, what this means is that dollars and euros are loaned into existence. Central banks create money out of thin air by loaning money that does not yet exist to their respective governments. Since the vast majority of money in circulation is now digital, such an operation doesn't even require the printing of physical paper. Money and the debt that accompanies it is simply typed into existence. Now, these privately owned central banks don't just loan out their imaginary money for free. They charge interest. But the money to pay back that interest doesn't yet exist in the system. Since all money is created this way, there's always more total debt plus interest to be paid back than there is money. This forces governments to constantly return to those banks for more loans, which create more money and interest. This is obviously a Ponzi scheme, and like all Ponzi schemes, it can only work for so long. The inevitable result when there's more total debt to be paid due to interest than money in existence is that eventually the debt will reach such astronomical proportions that it will become impossible to service that debt. This is why I said that the collapse of the dollar and the euro is a mathematical certainty. It's been guaranteed since the beginning by the very nature of our monetary system. You might ask yourself why anybody in their right mind would set up a system like this that's guaranteed to fail. Well, the answer is simple. For the same reason that any criminal sets up a Ponzi scheme. There's a small group of bankers who get very, very rich at the expense of the public before the system begins to falter. And they use that money to buy up real assets that maintain their value after the currency falls. Sound criminal to you? Well, that's because it is. But you know what? They're going to get away with it if we don't make a concentrated effort right now to educate the public about the true nature of money and the private central banks which are leading us to the slaughter. And if we let them get away with it this time, the next Ponzi scheme is going to be even bigger.
Listen to me, noble. Try to live it by yourself. And get the one you love, happy you somebody else.
Michael, Michael, it's rumored you're worth $50 million. Aren't you part of the 1%? Aren't you part of the 1%?
I do very well. And
how are you helping these people?
Because I do well. I want taxes raised on people who do well, including mine.
How are you helping these people with your $50
million? I don't have $50 million.
That's what it's rumored you're worth.
Well, really? Is that what you do, sell rumors?
We're asking you the truth.
You're just punk media is all you are. You lie. You lie to people. Stop lying.
I've got the blues. I pack my things and go. I guess you don't love me. You love it, Mr. So-and-so.
Okay? Is this okay?
Your job, Mr. Barroso. But apart from that, why can't we do things as mature democracies? Yes, I want you sacked, Mr. Schultz, as well. I want you all fired.
get back to our top story now, and that's the U.S. drone strikes, killing at least 100 people in three Muslim countries during the past 2 days. Mr. Naveed Ahmad is an investigative journalist joining us now live from Islamabad to share his thoughts with us about these drone strikes. Mr. Ahmad, first of all, let's speak about the effectiveness of the drone strikes and also their legality, because a lot of concern is being raised now by analysts across the world about whether these drone strikes are legal according to international law and are even effective.
As far as this efficacy is concerned, Pakistani government has clearly said that there is no mention of any names or any individuals who have been killed over the past three strikes that we have seen, which total up to 100 casualties in the Muslim world. So efficacy is very clear that there is nothing worth telling. That's why sources which are normally NATO sources in Afghanistan are not releasing any names or identities. As far as the legality is concerned, earlier it was being said Pakistan was on the side of Americans and there was a tacit agreement between Pakistani government and the American administration for carrying out drone attacks in some parts of tribal areas. But there are two resolutions now by all parties with military's consent and bureaucracy in Pakistan, which clearly say that drone attacks are not permissible in Pakistan, and Parliament unanimously passed this resolution that we will not accept it and we will retaliate it. Here comes the weakness of Pakistani government though, that they and the Pakistani political parties and military all agree that these should not carry on, but there is no retaliatory action going on against them. And Pakistani establishment is on one side and Pakistani people on the other. If there is a parliamentary decision, it should be enforced. And if it's not enforced, the public outcry will reflect in different manners. And such strikes are always condemned by international law experts. And there is no reason for giving any kind of legitimacy to such acts anywhere in any court of law or in any legal framework.
I have two words for you.
Predator drones.
You will never see it coming.
You think I'm joking?
According to the tables which we have assembled, it is our estimate that 4% of the American people own 85% of the wealth of America, and that over 70% of the people of America don't own enough to pay the debts that they owe. How many men ever went to a barbecue and would let one man take off the table what's intended for 9/10 of the people to eat? The only way you'll ever be able to feed the balance of the people is to make that man come back and bring back some of that grub he ain't got no business with. Now, how are you going to feed the balance of the people? What's Morgan and Baruch and Rockefeller and Mellon going to do with all that grub? They can't eat it. They can't wear the clothes. They can't live in the houses. Give them a yacht. Give them a palace. Send them to Reno and give them a new wife when they want it, if that's what they want. But when they've got everything on the God's living earth that they can eat and they can wear and they can live in, and all that their children can live in and wear and eat and all their children's children can use, then we got to call Mr. Morgan and Mr. Mellon and Mr. Rockefeller back and say, come back here. Put that stuff back on this table here that you took away from here that you don't need. Leave something else for the American people to consume. And that's the problem. We're not going to destroy the Gulf Refining Company. We're not going to destroy the Standard Oil Company. But we're going to say that the limit of any one man's stock ownership in the Standard Oil Company is from $3 to $5 million to that individual, and that the balance of the people of America own the balance of what the Standard Oil Company is worth. All right. Then, we start from the bottom, that the 25 or more million American families shall have a homestead, a home, and the comforts of a home, including an automobile and a radio, the things it takes in that house to live on. We say to America, 125 million, none shall be too big, none shall be too poor, none shall work too much, none shall be idle. No luxurious mansions empty, none walking the streets, none impoverished, none in pestilence, none in want, but in the land blessed by the smile of the Creator, with everything to be consumed, to be eaten, to be worn, that America will become a land sharing the fruits of the land, not for the favored few, not to satisfy greed, but that all may live in a land in which the Lord has provided an abundance sufficient for the luxury and convenience of the people in general.
Periodically, the huge apparatus of the federal government uses its power to give us information about itself and about ourselves in the form of statistics. Whether it is the Department of Labor, the Congressional Budget Office, the Treasury Department, or even the Federal Reserve, the feds are fixated on statistics, and they use statistics to make things appear better than they are and to manipulate our thinking. For example, the government likes to tell us that the economy is not as bad as we all know it to be. But what if the government's systems of measurement were manipulated in a way so as to fool you about how healthy the economy really is? Here's an example. On Freedom Watch recently, Cato economist John Tamney argued that it's time to abolish the GDP. This is one of the federal government's favorite yardsticks, but it is a trick and a joke. GDP, which stands for gross domestic product, is the way the government measures prosperity. Now, bear with me on this. I know it sounds technical, but it's really quite simple. GDP is the sum total of all economic activity in the United States. It includes all sales and all purchases and all loans. And generally speaking, the higher this number is, the better the economy appears to be. What's wrong with this picture? What's wrong is that the government calculates GDP to include what the government spends. But the government doesn't have any money of its own. It only has what it has extracted from us or what it borrows in our names. The government doesn't produce wealth, it consumes wealth. Thus, adding what the government spends to what the rest of us spend and claiming that that reveals a rosy picture is disingenuous at best and dishonest at worst. It is certainly not accurate. All right, imagine you have a swimming pool, and you go to one end of the pool with a bucket, and you fill it up, and then you walk to the other end of the pool, and you dump the water back in. Have you increased the amount of water, or have you just moved it around? The answer is obvious. Yet, that, in a nutshell, is what those who place so much faith in GDP would have you believe. They think that government taking tax dollars from one end of the economy and dumping them into the other end somehow creates wealth. They forget that every dollar the government extracts from taxpayers is one fewer dollar that taxpayers have to purchase or to invest or to save. What is the big picture here? It is that the government lies and cheats to make itself look better than it is. It regularly breaks its own laws. It does things to us that it prohibits us from doing, and we let them get away with this. Today, for example, in a scene straight out of Orwell's terrifying novel 1984, the federal government interfered with every broadcast TV station, every cable channel, including this one, and every radio station in the United States of America, ostensibly to see if it could do it, to determine if the feds have the means of taking over mass communication. How frightening is that? The president wants to know if he can wipe out the news. From Rush Limbaugh to NPR, from Bill O'Reilly to Rachel Maddow, from American Idol to CSI, all gone with the flick of a White House switch. Today it was just for 30 seconds. And for 30 seconds, the feds brought all electronic communications in the land to a halt, except for telephones and the internet. And we let them get away with this. It gets worse. The CIA buys and sells illegal drugs in massive amounts from foreign cartels, and it pays and it receives a fair market price. But the feds won't let you do so, even if your medical needs require the drugs that politicians who want to control you think you shouldn't have. The feds sell military-style guns to foreign cartels just to see where the bullets propelled by those guns end up. And governments in America, which want to monopolize force, do all they can to keep you from defending yourself. This is not an academic argument. In World War II, which was before the anti-gun crazies took over the government, the Japanese government was contemplating a land invasion of California. Admiral Yamamoto, the commander-in-chief of the Japanese Navy, advised against it. He said, "You cannot invade the mainland United States. There would be a rifle behind every blade of grass."
Manhattan federal judge Alvin Hellerstein has declined to hold the CIA in contempt for destroying videos that it had been ordered by the courts to preserve. The case revolves around 92 videos depicting hundreds of hours of interrogations of detainees. The tapes allegedly contained evidence of torture, and the CIA was ordered by numerous courts to produce the videos in relation to lawsuits arising from torture allegations. The 9/11 Commission also demanded that the tapes be produced. Instead, the agency destroyed them. Although the Obama Justice Department had already decided last year that no criminal charges would be filed for this blatant obstruction of justice, Judge Hellerstein's recent ruling ensures that the agency will not even face civil sanctions, or so much as a contempt order, for willfully breaking the law. In his ruling, Judge Hellerstein, the very judge who had ordered the CIA to produce the tapes in September of 2004, notes that the agency had instead provided a description of what they say was on the tapes, and implemented new protocols to ensure that they don't destroy evidence again, so there is no need to hold them accountable in any way. Judge Hellerstein's decision is not without precedent. In 2010, Obama's Office of Legal Counsel wrote a memo arguing the legality of Obama's secret list of assassination targets, a list that apparently includes American citizens who have not been convicted or even charged of a crime. The memo was used as the legal justification for the extrajudicial assassination of Anwar al-Awlaki, a U.S. citizen who the president ordered murdered early last year. Now, the Obama White House is arguing that they don't even have to show the justification for ordering the unconstitutional assassination of one of its own citizens.
You are asserting that he had operational control of the cargo plot and the Abdul Muttalib plot. He's now dead. Can you show us, or the American people, or has a judge been shown?
Well, again, Jake, I'm not going to go any further than what I've said about the circumstances of his death. And
is there going to be any evidence presented?
I don't have anything for you on that.
Do you not see at all, does the administration not see at all how a president asserting that he has the right to kill an American citizen without due process, and that he's not going to even explain why he thinks he has that right, is troublesome to some people?
Still, concerned citizens are attempting to challenge the Obama regime's power grabs in court. Earlier this year, Senator Wyden revealed that the federal government has a secret interpretation of the Patriot Act that allows the government much more power than is suggested by the wording of the act itself.
The American people will also be extremely surprised when they learn how the Patriot Act is secretly being interpreted, and I believe one consequence will be an erosion of public confidence that makes it more difficult for our critically important national intelligence agencies to function effectively.
When Charlie Savage of the New York Times filed a Freedom of Information Act request for the interpretation, he was denied on the basis that the interpretation itself is classified. Last week, Savage and the Times sued the federal government for refusing to release the documents.
Down in the valley on the foggy hill rock stood a crazy little demon blowing his top. Fire in his eyes and smoke from his head. You gotta be real cool to hear the words he said. He did the mop, 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 mop.
On the record, Agent Keenan, this inquiry commends you for peaceably containing a potentially explosive situation. But, off the record, you disobeyed a direct order from a superior, Joe.
I did. And I have no excuse that's going to mean anything here.
Well, it is the finding of this inquiry that Special Agent Joseph Keenan be relieved as head of Field Office 263. He's be placed on 1 week leave without pay, after which time he'll report to the Washington office for reassignment in the district.
I'm getting promoted. You're still gonna kill him.
The United States government doesn't kill people, Agent Keenan, in or out of custody.
Of course we're gonna kill him, Joe. I'm gonna kill him with kindness.
You gonna let him go to trial?
Oh, come on. Is this September 10th, 2001?
Patriot Act, bitch.
We can plant him forever, okay? Without a trial. Never show him the light of day, let alone a TV camera or a microphone.
How?
What do you think we've been doing the last 10 years?
Yeah, it's terrorism, Joe. Okay? If you kill an American because of a religious belief, you are a terrorist. And terrorists get locked the fuck up.
If it's all so easy to put these people away for life, why was I given those orders?
Truth? Because fuck up people like this.
They're animals.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Jesus saves.
He has pain in his soul for the one he loves, so he had death on his mind, cause my demon let him go. He wanna run through the world till he understand his pain. Somebody help him get my demon home again. He did
Robotics takes giant leaps forwards and backwards. Honda's human-shaped Asimo looking even more like the anthropomorphic baddies in iRobot, the company pimping its technological marvel. It can now run much faster, up to nearly 6 miles an hour. And Asimo's pretty nippy backwards too, not quite moonwalking, but close enough. And boy, can it hop and jump. School sports days in Japan will never be the same again. And it's smarter up top too, almost able to think on its own, distinguishing the voices of three people speaking at once using face recognition and analysing sound. It even serves refreshments, and after a long hard day, what better than a relaxing drink? But not just a cute party trick. Honda using the same technology to develop a robotic arm they hope can help with the country's nuclear crisis. Using much the same movements, it can open and close valves at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, which went into meltdown after the March tsunami. Honda working with the Tokyo Electric Power Company to try and bring the plant back under control.
It's sky turned green, he made the grass turn red, he even put his hair on grandma's bald head, he made the moon back up, he even pushed back time, he took the tootie out of fruity, had the devil drinking wine, he did a muffin, 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 muffin.
Top to you know what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to
11. 11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Felt good cause she finally got across to the crazy little demon that a woman still a boss. Down in the valley on the foggy hill rock, you can still hear the demon blowing his top. Back night, but in afternoon, he made leap year jump over the moon. Took the 4th of July, he put in May. He took this morning, but back yesterday, he did a
motherfucking
exploring a hidden world. Scientists here are drilling and exploding the ice sheet in Antarctica to investigate a lake hidden under the ice for 500,000 years. Now a British engineering team are returning for the first stage of a mission that will see them drill the full 3 kilometres down to Lake Ellsworth to see what lies beneath. State-of-the-art hot water drilling technology will be used to make a hole through the solid ice. A titanium probe will then be lowered to measure and sample the water, followed by a corer to extract sediment from the lake. It's all in an attempt to uncover clues about the evolution of life on Earth and even on other planets. And it will be hard graft for the scientists who will live in tents for 3 months as they work in one of the coldest places on Earth.
It was supposed to be the mission that put China in orbit around Mars and put Russia on its first interplanetary mission since the late 80s. But a technical fault may make the joint Phobos-Grunt mission less Mars and more of a mess. The spacecraft blasted off from Kazakhstan normally, aiming to land a small probe on the Martian moon, collect soil samples and bring them home. It was also the first mission to take life to another planet, with the spacecraft carrying bacteria samples to see if life could have been spread on meteors. Meanwhile, China's Yinghao-1 spacecraft would survey the surface for a year, but the audacious mission has barely gotten off the starting block. A mystery fault has developed, which means the spacecraft hasn't been able to plot its course away from Earth. Scientists have just 3 days to try and either rewrite the craft's software or risk it spinning out of control and either crashing back to Earth or becoming $163 million worth of space junk.
Food, may I help you?
Yeah, I'd like to place an order.
What'd you like?
Yeah, I'd like 3 orders of garlic chicken.
And then?
And then 3 orders of white rice.
And then?
And then... Oh, hey, you guys want soup?
Sure.
Yeah, 3 orders of wonton soup.
And then?
Oh, some fortune cookies, too.
And then?
Gosh, I think that's about it.
And then?
No, that's it.
And then?
No, and then. That's all I want.
And then?
Then nothing else, because I'm done ordering, okay?
And then?
No. See, all I want is the 3 orders of the garlic chicken and the 3 orders of the white rice.
And then?
And the soup, dude.
Oh, and the wonton soup.
And then?
And a cookie's fortune. And the fortune cookies, yeah. So it's just the chicken, the rice, the soup, and the fortune cookies, and that's it.
And then?
And then, you can put it in a brown paper bag and come put it in my hand, because I'm ready to eat.
And then?
I refuse to play your Chinese food mind games.
And then?
No! No, and then!
And then?
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 No, no, and then!
And then?
You're really starting to piss me off, lady.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
I had this idea of how if a large enough group of people, if a collective of consumers got together, then they could shut down any corporation they wanted to if it reached a big enough number of people that could instantaneously do boycotts and stuff. And someone Facebooked me this thing about something called collective consumerism, and this guy who did this weird experiment, and it's some group called Carrot Mob, I think. And the YouTube video he made was kind of cheesy, but the experiment itself was badass, which is he wanted to see what would happen if he could organize people on a local level. And he went to all these different liquor stores and he said, hey, if I get a giant group of people to come in here and buy a load of stuff, will you donate 20% of the proceeds to turning your liquor store into a more eco-friendly liquor store with better lights, better whatever, wiring so that you don't burn as much energy and it's better for the environment? So, like, he went to all these liquor stores, and one liquor store said, we'll give 20% of whatever you make us from this mob you're talking about to making it more eco-friendly. So, they ended up getting, at this little liquor store, they ended up getting a giant, around the block line of people waiting in line to buy fish in this liquor store as a form of activism. The place made in 3 hours $10,000 and ended up donating, like, you know, a big percentage of that. And now it's an eco-friendly liquor store. And this is all because of one guy. This is all because one guy came up with this experiment. What happens if we organize consumers? Because his theory
is... That's a great idea, too, because he's not asking them to do anything with that money that's bad for the business. It's only going to help their business.
That was his logic.
That's brilliant.
Because corporations just want to make money.
Yeah.
So if you could organize people at a big enough level and you go to corporations and say, hey, we're going to swarm you and buy a shitload of stuff from you on this day on the condition that you make these changes in your corporation. That's the theory behind it. It's pretty cool.
That's a brilliant idea. And you picked this up on Twitter? Someone Twittered this to you?
Someone popped it on my Facebook page. And it's like, that helps me a lot in, like, you know, philosophies that I'm developing and things I'm thinking about right now, which is, that is a cool thing, man.
Every day I get Twitter messages, Facebook messages. I get messages from people who are interesting. They send me interesting links. You create sort of a like-minded group of humans, you know, and that's something that you're a part of, man.
Yeah.
You know, and when we're talking about the possibility of, like, making the world a better place, you can make your world a better place, and you are, you know, and we're all making our world a better place. You know, we're all, by being cool to our friends, by surrounding ourselves with positive and interesting, creative, inspiring people, you make your world better by, you know, having good times all the time, because you're always around people where you enjoy each other's company and you feel energized by each other. And by doing that and creating your own immediate small world, and then by doing what we're doing and then broadcasting this ideal and showing your success with this and showing, you know, inspiring people with this thing, this is not something that requires money. This requires focus and intelligence, honesty and objectivity, but it just requires your energy. It requires you to do it, and we can all do it. We can all surround ourselves with people that are cool and be cool to the people that are around us all the time, and don't take anything less. Some people need religion for that, and that's one of the things that religion does a good job of programming people to be a good Christian. If you're a true Christian, you follow true Christianity, which most people who call themselves a Christian sadly don't. You know, most people who are crying out for death to Osama bin Laden,
God hates us,
and I'm a Christian, we don't tolerate that. They're not really listening to the actual words, you know, that are in the Bible. But to be a good Christian is to subscribe to an ideology that is going and moving your life in the direction of the positive at all times, to look out for your neighbors, to be a good person. All those things, these are guidelines to live a happy, productive life, to put yourself in the right frequency, like you were talking about in terms of your own personal depression, that you weren't in the right frequency, you weren't in the right state of mind because of nutrition, because of health, because of your own way of looking at the life.
Yeah, and you can...
Get it together, bitches.
Yeah, get it together, because this is the thing, man. I really believe that if enough people organize using the internet, this rudimentary nervous system that's springing up around a planet, if enough people really start using it in the right way, like this guy did in a very micro level with this carrot mob idea, if people start using it in the right way, I think you could turn this... simulator into some kind of amazing new world.
You could. And you know what? People complain sometimes that this issue gets brought up more than once on the podcast. But I'll give you a reason for that. You know, and there's a quote that someone read. I don't know who it was that wrote it, but someone had it on their Twitter recently. It's a genius quote that I've heard for years, but I always forget. Inspiration is like bathing. It's effective, but only for a short period of time. That's why we recommend it every day.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.